Hello and welcome to another Taylor's Tales podcast. This is Chris's Corner and I'm your host, Chris Taylor. Today we have a very special guest, one of my favourite people on this planet, Jonathan Edwards. How you doing, bud?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. You're too kind.
I don't flatter you, mate. You are one of my favourite people and for many reasons. But let's jump straight in, mate. Introduce yourself, what you've got going on at the moment, stuff like that.
Oh, goodness me. Not much at the moment. Obviously, COVID's put a lot of dampers on my plans. Was planning on going abroad this summer. Doing a bit of travelling, but no, I'm back to uni in September.
So, you're doing architecture, aren't you?
Architecture and environmental engineering. Which is a mouthful to say, but it's well worth the 5 years that I'm going to be there. So,
sure will, mate. I know I'm absolutely fascinated by the stuff that you do. I mean, for me as a computer scientist who creates ephemeral, almost,
yeah,
not like knocking it to be honest, but like if I create something, like people can interact with it, but it's like it's not physical. You can't see it in the real world almost, and so
I'm always
intrigued by the fact that. You know, one day you're going to be, I mean, I'm hoping on my end that you're going to be making houses and, you know, designing huge monstrosity of buildings that you're going to be proud of one day. And I truly believe that.
But...
Maybe not monstrosity, but you know what I mean? That's, yeah. But so we were going to talk about traveling. I'm glad you brought that up anyway. And I was going to ask that even if you were going to be traveling this summer, where was the idea to go?
As you know, I've got family in Ireland, so I was going to head over to Ireland for a bit, and I was planning on doing 2 or 3 weeks in Ireland and then maybe doing a European circuit. I've done a Southeastern Asia kind of circuit, as you know, and I wanted to explore more of Europe and more of the British Isles especially. It seems like I've done a lot of traveling outside of Europe, but I haven't done as much in places where it's so easily accessible as well. Like the UK, it's so easy to travel around. It's so easy to see the beautiful sights that this country, or these countries, I should say, have to offer. So it's, yeah.
Yeah,
definitely,
mate, I totally agree.
Doing that one day.
Yeah, definitely. I think that I'm semi-jealous because we went to Northern Ireland, but I've never been to the Republic of Ireland.
The Republic of Ireland, no.
Yes. I'm not going to say proper in any way, shape or form, but I will say that it does show a lot of character in the sense of the people there. So I'm very intrigued to get out there at some point.
Oh, 100%. 100%. It's a great laugh going out there. Obviously, it's different for me because obviously whenever I go out there, I visit family. And it's not much of an activities trip, but we do try and do a bit of both here and there. So, yeah, definitely recommend places like Galway, Cork. Donegal's lovely. My family is mainly from Monaghan, but, yeah, also a lovely place. Lovely walking out there, very good hiking.
Well, for me personally, just because I'm such a fan of, my sort of travelling started when I was like 16, just when my dad took me up to the Highlands of Skye. And I remember when you started talking about like the sort of countryside of Ireland, I could definitely relate to that. And to me personally, it does bring back a lot of memories of, you know, when you're just out in the middle of nowhere and you just feel that sort of freedom to sort of not, you know, you're not in the city where it just feels like you're sort of crushed in. You do feel like you can just walk out your front door and there's just something there to just blow you away a little bit.
100%, yeah. And I think I've told you this before, but I've never been to Scotland. I've always wanted to go, but I've never just had the chance.
I'm really hoping we get a chance as a pair, just because I've got so many places within Scotland, places where I've been, places where I haven't been. Just for me personally, there's this one area within Skye which I'm gonna try not to give away because it is a really nice area and I don't want people like just going there immediately just because it's so good. But it's just got a valley almost. Myself and my dad mistook it for the Three Sisters. So famously, there's these three mountains in the furthest part of Scotland. And my dad was like, oh, we're going to go see them today. We're going to go see it. And we got to this random point where there was just a house in the middle of nowhere. You can just imagine sort of greenery and mountains aside of it. And I looked around and there was nothing there. And I was like, Dad, because you know what you're like at 16, you're just like, you can go anywhere. You think like there's no problem with just walking up a mountain and just doing it that day and then coming back down.
Yeah.
And so I said, let's just walk over there, thinking that up those mountains was the Three Sisters. And we went up there, we came back there, we went and just saw this like valley that just, it saw onto the Atlantic. So you went up to this, the top of this, I want to say hill, because I think my younger mind has overestimated the size of what I actually saw, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And in when I saw it, I was like blown away by seeing this, these like three mountainous areas. And you just looked into the ocean and you just saw it from there in this just remote area. And there's just like this architectural, beautiful cottage that's just placed there on the right hand side. And it's just in the middle of nowhere. And obviously coming back from there, my dad then tells me that, oh, by the way, those weren't the Three Sisters. We haven't climbed that mountain. And I was like, at that point, I'm pretty sure I told like all my friends at the time that I'd climbed the mountain and felt like the biggest twat on earth afterwards. But, you know, that's life, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's a whole different story once you're in those places. It could be, you could be led onto a certain place and it could be totally different to what you previously thought it was or what you are thinking at the time. And I can remember being in Cambodia on Koh Rong, one of the southern islands of Cambodia. And I was on the village side of it, and one day I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to go for a walk, walked around this island, or well, half of the island, because it's quite a sizable island, and ended up on this beach. And I could have thought this beach was like 2 miles long, but then I went back with a load of people and it was just a lot shorter than it was. But it was just so, I think once, like you said, once you have that freedom aspect, you the space kind of morphs to that kind of feel. I could definitely feel that when traveling through Nepal and India and all that sort of stuff, where you just got this vast space, sparsely populated areas that you're going through, and it's just the scenery out there, absolutely amazing.
I remember when you first went out there, and this was your first time traveling on your own, wasn't it, as well, back in 2017?
Yes, it was, 2017 I left,
Yeah, and I just remember thinking to you, you're going to come back a different person. And you did for all the positive reasons as well. And what you're describing is just like, it just sort of, not to sound cliche, but it does broaden the mind in some way or another.
Oh yeah, it does. It definitely does. Because it's, you don't just see the places and see new animals or new trees, or you experience the lifestyle, you experience the food, and you experience the whole ethos around living in that country. Especially if you go to local, when people ask, I always recommend local food, and always go to like restaurants, bars that the locals will go to, because then you've experienced the country and the culture for what it is. And it's exactly the same in any country. If people were coming to visit England, I wouldn't necessarily say just go to Wetherspoons, because you can go to Wetherspoons in any city and it's exactly the same. However, if you go to those niche kind of those niche bars, those really you've got traditional, but then you've also got those individual bars, it really hits different.
I totally agree, mate, and that's something that took me a while to get used to, in the sense of when I was out there, you do look at Google sort of as a way to find these places, don't you? I mean, I did find a couple of restaurants and places that were safe. Because if you imagine in Thailand, in Bangkok at night, and you're wandering around, there is a sort of, you've got to be sort of have your wits about you a little bit. So just wandering down random alleys to try and find food isn't probably the best thing to advise in certain areas. But you're right in saying that if you do go down certain like areas and you just see these like hidden away restaurants, or sort of bars or places to do food, they have so much more character.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. There's so many places, like hidden gems, I like to call them, that are just everywhere. They could be 5 minutes down the road from where you currently live. Obviously, out in the country, you've got hidden gems everywhere. Obviously, in the city, it's less so, but you do have these hidden gems that people have just transformed into these absolutely amazing, amazing spots to eat, drink, dance, whatever.
I feel like that every time I, believe it or not, every time I visit London in some way or another, is that something just pops up. And I remember doing a couple of trips when I was younger and just thinking London was just one big, you know, chain, you know, like McDonald's and fast food and everything around there. And that's all you would find. But there is certain places that you can find out there, but they are well expensive in comparison to going to some of the Southeast Asian places. But I think that's the same.
Yeah. But it's so like the restaurant that we went to, Mild Dutch Pancake House.
Yes.
We went to the one in, big shout out to Mild Dutch.
Yeah, I love it.
They do every kind of pancake and it is amazing. But we went to the one in South Kensington and then just took a walk up through the park, and it's so, London and the Greater London area is so vastly big. There's so much to do there, and it's impossible to do everything in a day.
I totally agree.
I've certainly gone to London and thought, you know what, I'm going to hit two museums. Then I want to go and get lunch at this place. I want to go to Baker Street and do that sort of stuff. I want to go here, there, and everywhere. Do the aquarium. Do the London Eye. Over the past years,
I always remember us two at the end of the day just slumped into the train.
Oh my goodness.
Just knackered.
Yeah.
And it seems
so
to be a
tiring walking around all day, but don't feel it until you get back home.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you just collapse and you're gone from there.
Yeah.
But what you're talking about and like wanting to do all the stuff, I always overestimated myself when I was younger when it came down to how long I could, like, we could do this, we could do that. And it's only as you get older that you sort of split things up, don't you, into reasonable chunks. Because I remember when I first went to Australia for the first time, I thought, oh, I'll be able to get so much done within a week. A week is nothing. You feel like you've not seen anything. And I look back now and I think I could have easily split that stuff up into, like, you know, at least 2 months travel and easily just stuff it in there. So there's a tip right there, isn't it? Is, you know, not to overestimate, go slow and sort of really enjoy the process.
Also, for first timers going traveling, albeit in the UK or out in Asia, America, just take your time and have fun, because there's a lot of times where people said you need to do this, you need to do that, and I've just ended up in that country and I thought, you know what, on the day, in that moment, I want to do this, this, and this, and I've just planned it. Southeast Asia is brilliant for that. All the hostels are so accommodating, and you can change your plans in a second.
Moment's notice. Yeah, I totally.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That took me a while to figure out. I'll be dead honest with you. That took me, like, I used to just be super structured when I went on holiday. I was like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And I think you're a much more spontaneous and flexible person when it comes down to travel. Because I saw that when you were first traveling, is that you just did lots of, it went all over the place sort of thing in that sense.
Yeah. So I did have the first maybe a couple of weeks planned. I had India planned because I'd never traveled there before and it was very difficult to travel through India.
Yeah.
If you'd never traveled before, then that was part of a kind of a tour group thing that went through Nepal, ended up in Thailand, in Bangkok. And then that's when all plans went out the window. I did book a flight from Bangkok to Vientiane in Laos, which I regretted because I should have taken the slow boat from Chiang Mai all the way down into Luang Prabang, which is the northern part of the two countries. If people do tend to go over there, I just say go with the flow, because there's a lot of people who are there for their first time as well, and you can band up and group up into different groups, and you're never really alone, although you're traveling on your own.
Totally.
There's so many people doing the same thing.
Yeah, you know what's sad is that when you're traveling and you do that, and my dad's told me this multiple times, is that the people you meet are the types of people you're looking to meet because you're traveling. But as soon as you come home, it's almost like you want to see the types of people that you meet when you travel. And it's hard to explain that, but
yeah,
whenever I've been traveling, it's the, like yourself, there's so much positivity. There's so much, we're going to, let's go do this. Let's, you know, there's so many sort of different types of people out there. And it does make you think that, oh, you know, staying in the same place all your life probably isn't the best thought, or probably isn't the best, because you're limiting yourself to the types of people you see.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. You're going back to this tribal view, if you're stuck in one place for your whole lifetime, your tribal view is only going to be a range from 100 to 500 people. Whereas if you venture out even to the neighboring cities or whatever, it's going to extend up to 1,000. And then you go out to different countries, your tribal view is going to be 20,000, 30,000 different types of people that you meet from all different backgrounds. And the Southeast Asian circuit, it's so well-traveled, and everyone goes there. Americans, Australians, the British, French, German, all of them, they all go around that. And it's one thing I recommend that every person should do in their lifetime.
Yeah, 100%. Plus, it's cheap when you actually get there. The flights are, you know, relatively expensive for most people. Is that it's once you get there, you start to realize, like, oh, I can get food for like less than £5 and get away with it. Sort of thing.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
I think there was one place. It's quite a dodgy place in Bangkok. It was by the airport, and I stayed there for 40p a night, which was incredibly cheap.
I can't say that I paid 40p a night.
it was horrifically cheap, and did not like it there. But I only stayed for one night because I had the flight the next day.
What's 40 pence at the end of the day? I mean, you could have, that's crazy, because I can imagine like people just like flipping stuff at casinos and just saying like throwing away £10, and you've just, you know, sort of gambled 40 pence and got a great experience out of it and a story to tell as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, cool. Plenty of those.
No, I love it, mate. 100%. And I remember the process of you saying like, oh, I'm going to go traveling. And I just remember I was so excited for you when you first did it, just because after me doing it a couple of times, and granted I only did mine within spaces of like 3 week periods, so the fact that you did yours for like 6 months was just, you know, mind-blowing.
Yeah, I did plan to stay longer, obviously I had to come home, but the 6 months was definitely not long enough. I think I loved every moment of it, and I'm planning to go all over the world, different countries, here, there and everywhere. And different circuits. So you've got the Japanese circuit, and then the Korea circuit, and then you've got the Chinese circuit to Russia. So all these different places where you can travel. But Asia is a prominent kind of traveling area for me.
I've always been
fascinated by that area. I'm also very fascinated by kind of the Middle Eastern area, because I'm love the Crusades era and all that sort of stuff, and the historical politics behind it. But obviously it's quite a treacherous place to go at the moment. But I would love to go to Damascus, Jerusalem, Acre, Lebanon, Beirut.
Oh, mate. You watched Kingdom of Heaven, didn't you? Fan of that, and I loved watching. I know this is really silly, but like the visuals behind that, and we're probably going to find out later on when I look this up that it probably wasn't filmed within Jerusalem or Damascus, but nonetheless, like the idea of going there and seeing this history behind, like you said, the Crusades and it
puts history to a picture. You can see a picture of the pyramids of Giza, but then you don't have that connection with like ancient Egypt until you have maybe a book or a film, like the there's a Christian Bale film Gods of Egypt? No, it's not Gods of Egypt.
Oh, is it
Exodus?
Exodus. Yeah.
That whole kind of philosophy of, it's not, I wouldn't call it a philosophy, but the attachment of history to an image or to a movie, it's so it just remains in our minds. It's so prominent, really.
It is. I totally agree with you. And funny you should say that, because like, it's just getting that small bit of inspiration, even if it is from a movie, because I got inspired to go to Iceland through the I think it's Walter Mitty, like the, do you remember
Secret Life of Walter
Secret
Mitty?
Life, that's it. Yeah, I remember that. And then also went to Rome purely for Assassin's Creed, as silly as that sounds, but you know, nonetheless, like I went there. I wasn't like, I got there and I was like, this is sick nonetheless, even if I wasn't a fan of Assassin's Creed.
Rome's a great place. Where was the one place I wanted to go? Barcelona. The Sagrada Familia is amazing, but I went for Las Ramblas. I saw Las Ramblas in a film. I don't know what film, but that street is just amazing.
I'm jealous, mate. That's like the city on the ocean, isn't it, Barcelona? It's like,
yes,
one of those, yeah. Beautiful. No, that would be, there's so many, isn't there? And in your mind, I mean, like you said there, with like physically seeing the visuals of that alley or the place within Barcelona. I'm not going to try and pronounce it like you have there, but the actual place itself gives you a sort of spirituality. I've never found spirituality through religion personally, apart from maybe a small amount of Buddhism, but I would say that traveling's the closest thing I've ever got to it, just because of where you go and you see these places, the architecture behind it.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it's, you just, the feeling that you have in that place, in that moment, in that kind of environment, with all those people about, or the lack of people in some respects, and be it a holy place or a non-holy place, it's how you feel. Because you could go to some places like the Sagrada Familia, look up and you think, yeah, I'm not feeling it. But then you could go to Paris and see the Eiffel Tower and love that. It's all personal to a load of different people.
I totally, yeah. It's funny you should bring that up. That's the way I feel towards the Colosseum in Rome. It's a total con. Don't go there.
I loved it. See, that's the thing. I loved it when I went.
I'm glad we're disagreeing on something here, because that's one thing that I got there and I was like, is this it? Like, where's the fighting platform for the blood to be spilled?
I was a bit underwhelmed when I was there. Still loved it. Underwhelmed. Yeah. Mainly because I saw the fantastic film Gladiator with Russell Crowe in. And in the film, it's a lot bigger than it is in real life. So I went there, stood in the balconies or the viewing platforms, viewed this area, and I thought, oh, this is a lot smaller than advertised. But obviously, the films just make it.
Like, this is what's going on here.
Yeah. But I loved it. Absolutely loved the Roman kind of, the Roman era. And then Caesar's Palace and all that sort of stuff. You can see it's a totally different world you're going into. That's my opinion anyway.
No. I think I agree. If you're, Colosseum aside, I would say that for me personally, Rome itself is a historical, beautiful place that sort of is reminiscent of a past time where intellectuals and sort of politicians and warriors live side by side. And I don't think we can say that that happens anymore. The modern day warrior doesn't really have people don't have swords that they carry around on them on a day-to-day basis, maybe spiritually, but like physically, that sort of period of time does have a reminiscence of art and culture, and which you can still see. And this is why I'm fascinated a little bit by your architecture, is that you go there and you can get that vibe through the food, through the architecture around you. So although the Colosseum to me was a bit of a letdown, the rest of the place is just beautiful.
Yeah. Lovely places to go.
Yeah. And I was gonna say, from that was wasn't Rome like the first one of the first places you went with your family, or am I wrong with that? Is that something that?
Yes, it's one of the first international places that we went to. We've been to France skiing, and then but that was only once. Rome once, but a lot of the time we spent our holidaying in the UK. Or in Ireland, seeing family. But no, I haven't. That's probably why I haven't really done a lot of Europe.
Yeah,
I've obviously been to Italy, done Rome, done Spain. Well, I say done Spain. I've only done one city, so it doesn't really count. But yes, I do. Well, not urgently, but I do urge to go and visit all the cities and all the countries in Europe, and just get even. Countries right next to each other just have differences in their obviously dialect, but you have differences in their culture, in their speech, that's dialect, isn't it? Foods, that sort of stuff. But
I'm kind of sure, obviously, that there's a limit on, and I'm starting to realize this now as I've got older and I've got a grip on finances and sort of realizing that traveling isn't per se feasible for every family of four or so, or however big the family is, to take your kids to, you know, Germany or to Eastern Europe or to any of these places. And it's only as I've got older, like, actually this is the prime time to go visit it now, like in our 20s when you have that ability to do so. And one of my goals would be, and I don't know about you, but travel it via train and use one of those rail passes that people talk about going through Europe, because
you see a lot more.
Yeah.
And it's even going on the train, you experience different experiences and you go to different places, and you could go stop off at a train station and think, you know what, I wouldn't mind going around this area for a few hours or so. And then it's a whole different kind of subset of where you're visiting.
Yeah, I get. I'm the type of person when I'm traveling is that when people take me on tours, I kind of find it a little bit too slow. So people who dedicate an entire day to something, I'm like, no, let's take a photo, go, move on. Like once I've seen something, I want to move on quickly. And so having a train where you can just get on and off and move on to the next place really sort of vibes with me a little bit, because I don't like being stuck. And I think that's something I've learned as well through traveling is that, you know, if you get stuck in one place and you're there for a long period of time, you've done everything you can within the area, that by the end of it, you're just sort of sick and tired of it. But have you had anything like that?
Yes, Vientiane. I, in Lao, capital city of Lao, I went over there, booked 3 days, saw everything in one day. And then I booked a coach, like pre-booked the coach after 3 days. So I had 2 days to wait for the coach, essentially. So I just went to like cafes, internet cafes. There was this Italian guy who owned this pizza restaurant, and it was just stone-baked pizza. So I had a pizza for 2 days.
When you're traveling, food sort of diet and everything like that goes out the window. Let's be honest. I mean, it's like, that's not something that you can really keep track of. Oh yeah.
Especially in hot countries, the amount of weight that you shed just by sweating, in these tropical climates, the diet did go out the window. Vientiane, I definitely overbooked the days.
And that sort of led you to, where did you go after that? Where was after Vientiane?
So Vientiane, I went up to Luang Prabang. I got a coach, overnight coach to Luang Prabang, which is a great little town. I don't know if it's a village or a town, but I think it's a town, on a river system. And during the day, you can go and visit the temples and all that sort of stuff, which is nice. But once the bars start opening, then it gets a bit more lively and it gets quite nice. Then after the bars close, that's when it's really good.
Oh, really?
You can just get in, you can get into a tuk-tuk. Well, you have tuk-tuks waiting outside these bars and they just say, oh, drunk bowling. You're like, oh, okay, yeah. So you go into these tuk-tuks and they drive you to this. All I can say is this warehouse that's got like 15, 20 odd lanes, bowling lanes, and there's a bar there. So you just get a load of beers and you can continue drinking till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, they come up with everything around there, like any way to make some sort of money. And I think obviously tourism with COVID, like this is probably, I always think to myself, like, how are those sort of places staying open? And how are things affected out there due to the lack of tourism now?
Yeah, it's obviously it's difficult to travel around when there's a global pandemic. But there are people, I definitely know a load of people that are traveling at the moment and they're just being extra careful, wearing a mask everywhere. Yeah, there's actually a couple of people that we both know. I'll let you know after, but
yeah.
They both know that's going traveling in Switzerland, in France, I think, that kind of area. And then I know one person who's currently in Korea.
Yeah.
Wow. Who I met traveling. I met him traveling in Vietnam, actually. And then I know another person who's traveling around Alaska at the moment.
Maybe I just don't have the balls to be able to do that at the moment. Maybe for me personally. Yeah. But, you know, for me, I'm thinking to myself, like, that's risky, to say the least, in some way or another. But
I wouldn't particularly do it, but yeah, it's great to see people are experiencing life and doing things when it is all very much kind of quite gloomy when you're stuck inside and you're on, well, not a house arrest, but you're on lockdown, or although lockdown's easing a bit right now, you can see these new cases coming up quite prominently in Spain and France, and I reckon we'll get another wave pretty soon.
So do I, yeah. And it, well, this is why I had to sort of throw my, I think Australia are one of the issues at the moment. I mean, one of my mate said that although South Australia is fine, Melbourne's like the most affected area in the entire country, and it seems to me that the rest of the country has to be sort of closed down just based off that one area. And then New Zealand's got like 5 cases and they're still closing down the entire like country.
Yeah.
Those 5 cases, which is crazy. It's madness.
I mean, it's working.
It's working, but I look at it and I think to myself that the UK clearly isn't doing something right, or it's doing something wrong. I don't know. I just look at New Zealand and think, wow, that's like super extreme, but it is working, like you say.
Yeah, it is. I know a couple of people who live out there and they've said that it's difficult to get into the country. And these are British people. So what they're doing is flying back to the UK for Christmas. They normally chase the sun, so they normally come for the summer and then go back for Christmas. But they thought, you know what, although it's safer in New Zealand, we're going to be with the family just in case anything bad happens in the UK. So obviously everyone's got their different situation they're going through, and I just wish all the health to everyone, really.
Well, this all is what, yeah, totally agree. And I think, like you say, all the health to everybody. And for me personally, this is why I like talking about a little bit of the traveling aspect, because we're so confined and so sort of like not caged, but to an extent locked down. To
it feels like a cage though. A lot of people have family members that are shielded and they've had to kind of stay inside, and they're seeing all these people going out and experiencing life a bit more. So going to restaurants, going to parks and going down the river or something like that. Whereas some families are a bit more strict, and I know that my family is kind of eased off and we're going out and seeing friends and family like that. But yeah, there are a lot of people who are still on high alert and they're still kind of confining themselves, which is making them feel like a bit of a cage, but
yeah, definitely.
It's a difficult time.
It is, but there's going to be a bright future. I see it. I think that there's going to be a period. I can't down the road. I'm thinking of this as like one of the greatest stories to tell your kids. It's like for a year, like the entire world changed. This is like something that's unprecedented, and in my mind, it's the Great Depression. Except instead of it only affecting money, we're now thinking of like people's mental health, people's like physical health, and like the entire world is affected. Because then, like, it was only the US, Japan, and like some of the major powers. And now we're looking at like every single nation.
Yeah. And you're just going to turn around and be like, the amount of films I got through in 6 months, absolutely amazing. I've got a PlayStation, and I think I've platinumed, got 100% achievements on 4 or 5 games during lockdown. I've watched countless number of films.
Yeah.
And I'm still reading that one book.
I'm still struggling with that book. Mate, that just reminds me of Bert Kreischer's quote today where he says idiots shouldn't read books. It's just like...
Yes, yeah.
Oh my God. It's that man has some sort of mind going for him right there. But
you're
going to get
it's
there.
It's hilarious.
I think to myself that that book is just merely a barrier to you reading like all of these other books that you actually want to read.
But then I see it as, so for people who don't know, I'm reading Gregory Clay's Marx and Marxism, and it is a very difficult book to get through.
Yes.
I started reading it 2 years ago, I think, and I'm not very good at sitting down and reading in my own spare time. And I watched this documentary on reading and books and libraries around the world and different style of libraries and architecture and all that sort of stuff. And in this documentary, they said, if you read one book a year for the rest of your life, say the average person reads 85 books, that would be 85 books for their entire life.
Yeah.
The average life being 85. And if you read half an hour a day, only half an hour a day, that 85 books will turn into over 1,000 books in your lifetime just by reading half an hour a day. And since then, I've been reading half an hour a day. However, it's still a bloody book to get through. But
he did point out at the end of the documentary that they were also struggling to get through a similar book that you guys were talking about. And he asks him at the end of it.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter if there's a book that's like that you're finding super struggle, like a struggle to get through. I think it's just a struggle to get through, and you shouldn't criticize yourself for that.
No, a lot of people do the. I don't know what it's called, but it might be like a 30-page review where they read the first 30 pages. If they don't like it, they chuck it. Or
that's what I did with Woman in the Window.
But with me, I think I really find Marx and Marxism quite fascinating. Obviously, when I first started reading it, I wanted to learn more about Marxism and how that turned into kind of the modern day communism, or the communism that kind of was prominent in World War II, especially. And I was fascinated with that, and I started reading it, and I got through 100 pages, and then I got to maybe 150 pages, and then I maybe stopped for 6 months, and then I started doing it again every other day. But getting through a book that's not only difficult to read, but quite a political, like heavy book, it's fascinating and kind of annoying at the same time, because it's difficult to focus.
It's that
hurdle. Once I'm over the hurdle, I'm just gonna read what I enjoy reading and then get through 4 or 5 books that I can sit down and read in a day. And then
I remember trying to I've I remember when I was like 19, I was like, oh, I'm gonna get, I really like Shakespeare. And what I meant was, when I said I really like Shakespeare, is that I liked one book by Shakespeare, Much Ado About Nothing. And then I was like, okay, I'm gonna try and read all of these other extremely complex stories that aren't as easy to read. And what I ended up happening was that I'd read like three of them, and then I was like, oh, I don't feel like reading them. And I went into a sort of, I would say, book depression, because I didn't read for like at least 6 months after that. So yeah, the fact that you're grinding away at it, you're done better than I have in that sense, because I've just books that I like.
Yeah, and going back to Shakespeare, and I've never really been one for Shakespeare. I've never really been one for reading, apart from if I need to for my course, for example. But yeah, Shakespeare is the one that I didn't really touch when I was at school, let alone since school. But all the classics, so you've got Shakespeare, Oliver Wilde.
Yes.
All those kind of prominent figureheads in the classic era. I do want to get through at some point in my life. However, I don't think I need to get into the habit of reading every day and the enjoyment of reading every day. And then I can pick it up and be like, okay, now I'm ready. Yeah. And in my opinion, it's more of a justification. This is such a great book. I'm not going to ruin the book because I'm not in the process of reading at the moment. But once I get into the habit of reading more, but there's one thing that I can't do that you can do, and I'm just turning away, is reading multiple books at the same time. I don't know how you do it. I can't. I just can't.
It's the best system I've ever come up with, mate. I've never been this, and this is probably going to be the most prolific part of my life the next 5 years, and then I'll just downhill crash and burn when it comes down to like my mental capacity. But that's fine, I can live with that. But doing 10 pages of three different books every morning, it seems to have unlocked something in my mind where I'm able to just be like, right, that's sort of one area. So I've got like the three books I've got up here, the three books that I'm currently reading, you know, Darth Plagueis, and then you've got 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos by Jordan B. Peterson, and then you've got Guards, Guards by Terry Pratchett. So they're all completely different types of books. And so it allows you to be like, oh, I'm not feeling 12 Rules for Life today. I'm not feeling like being lectured by somebody, because that's what it kind of is in one way or another. So I'll be like, oh, Plagueis. Such a good, you know, it's fascinating characters on Star Wars lore, which we both believe is just some of the best written work for Star Wars. And then my dad's got me into Terry Pratchett, and it's the most realistic comedic humor that I've ever read. It's so good. Like the characters you can imagine meeting in real life, even though they're like dwarves and elves and like human beings that are in a city called Angkor Mot that's like randomly placed where dragons and wizards live, and it doesn't have and it's got laws that don't make sense, where the thieves guild it rules the city and you can steal something and get away with it as long as you pay a fine per month, and it's so you've got this like breadth of reading where if you're bored of one book, then you can move on to the other. But as long as you do 10 pages, you've justified to yourself that you've read that book and you've got over that hurdle. And so it doesn't feel like it's a task every day just to read that one book. But I do know what you're saying, because Marxism, I read like the original sort of Marxist by Karl Marx, and it was just...
It's brutal. Communist Manifesto.
Yeah, it was just brutal.
Yeah. That's a really bad, difficult read to get through.
It's funny, though, because I remember doing history A level and loving learning about Russia and loving learning about the Russian Revolution. But as soon as I read the manifesto, it just sort of like drilled out of my head. And I was like, I don't ever want to touch this piece of history ever again.
it's a fascinating time. But yeah, the the literature around that period is very difficult.
It is, but then I need to. I really want to read this book by. It's gonna come to me later on, but it's Ivan is the main character, and he's just a simpleton within Russia, and it's basically talks about how a man within a time that where murder and sort of society is crumbling finds some sort of light within the dark, and it's meant to be one of these pieces of Russian sort of literature that defines the era, like the Speakings of Tolstoy, and there's also a couple of others I'm not going to be able to remember off the top of my head, but I'll remember later on once this podcast is over.
Yeah.
But like I said, there's so many good pieces of work that you're told to read, like you've said, but you'll be like, oh, this is such a struggle to get through.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. But it's just finding that balance. Obviously, I'm very determined and very, what's the word? Well, it's just determined really, isn't it? I'm very determined to get through this book. If I'm fascinated in it, I want to get through it and I want to read up and I want to know about everything. If it was more of a fantasy book.
Yes.
That wasn't informative. I'd be less inclined to go all the way through and more inclined to just be like, okay, I'll put that on the side. If I want to read it at a later date, I can read it at a later date. But it's...
What's your next venture? So you've got this Marxism. So
I've got Marx and Marxism. The next one after that, I was either thinking going for Vitruvius, the 10 books on architecture. That's very apt to my degree. Or Stephen Fry's Heroes, which I have heard is a very good book. And I don't know if you do the same, but I practice the art of, I think it's pronounced Sundoku. It's the Japanese art of rewarding yourself with books, although you haven't read any books.
I've not heard of that. I'm going to look that up after this. That's cool.
The other day I bought 5-6 books and I was just like, yeah, I want to read that at one point. I want to read that at one point. Although I haven't finished this book yet.
Doesn't matter.
Countless others in my room.
Yeah, no, but what you're talking about is exactly what most people lack. You want to read. It's just that you're struggling to do it.
Oh yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I think I just need to get through the books that I have first.
Yeah. Pat yourself on the back for being able to get through 200 pages of Marxism. Like, come on. Let's be honest.
I think I need that. Yeah. But yeah, that it's all about that challenge, really. And like that documentary said, half an hour a day is not difficult. Even if you go down for your morning cup of coffee, instead of switching the TV on or if you want to watch the news in the morning, that I think that's a very apt way to spend your morning. But if you're going to switch the TV on and maybe watch morning breakfast show or whatever, then maybe swap that out for a book, or even on your lunch break, if you're at work, you go for a walk, for example, you could go for a walk, take a book, flick through a couple of pages, and on your way back, you can take in what you like doing or the scenery, if you want to look at the scenery. But even adding that little half an hour a day is great. And a lot of the time I get up in the morning, I go down to have my coffee, I read a couple of pages and then think, oh no, I need to do something. And I do whatever I need to do. And then I just come back to the book later on. As long as I kind of make up that half an hour, and that half an hour will build up to an hour, and that hour build up to an hour and a half and 2 hours and so on, until I feel that it doesn't encroach on my productivity or anything else.
Without a doubt, mate. But you're building good habits. I think that's the main thing, isn't it, at the end of the day? And in a time like this, where it feels like you've got unlimited time, and it feels, I mean, depends on like the scenario that you're in at the moment, depending on whether you're unemployed, whether you're, you know, if you are employed, if you're working from home, if you're not working from home, the idea being that you can find these things to do that are going to make you feel productive, they're going to make you feel better about yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, this is why I started this podcast, just because it's going to be something new to add, to be constructive on yourself and to make yourself feel that you're going to be, you've got another thing added to the list. You know, you've got all your fingers in all the pies sort of thing.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also, it might not be everyone's cup of tea listening to this podcast, but there might be a couple of people out there thinking, well, especially myself, I like to listen to the podcast. And there might be some people out there listening to this conversation thinking, I don't read a lot and I never knew about that half an hour a day. Maybe I can interchange that into my work life balance or into my lifestyle. And like you said, this lockdown is the abundance of time gets rid of the structure that people have in their lives. And especially I know for myself, I strive on structure, whereas a lot of people don't strive on structure. But if I have something planned from like say 9 till 10 and then 11 till 1 and then whatever in the afternoon, I can then work around that. And although haven't got much to do, I'm not working at the moment, I'm just kind of seeing it through, looking for jobs if things are coming up, but I'm planning my time and I'm sorting out my calendar and my daily schedule, and my daily routine is go outside, get at least half an hour of that fresh air outside. Even looking at the color green is proven to increase mental health and productivity, actually.
No way.
So I always go outside for half an hour. And if that's with my book, then that's with my book. If it's not with my book, then I just sit on my swing chair out in the garden, or I go and walk up to the park or whatever. But yeah, reading is, I've incorporated that into my structured lifestyle at the moment, and working out as well. Working out is obviously very difficult for a lot of people who don't have access to gyms. And now that the gyms are slowly opening again, they can kind of get back into that habit.
It's positive to the point where something that I've discovered, and this is probably me being a little bit naive over the years, is that you require the gym to be able to get bigger. And that's something that you had been telling me beforehand because of your rowing experience. Like, that's not necessarily true. And I think I've just sort of proven to myself, just through consistency and just putting in the time. And it's not, you know, I wouldn't say that the amount of time I put in is excessive. I normally, you know, the amount of time I put in to most people probably is, but just putting in, I would say, 3 days a week for exercise, you know, just doing three workouts a week and just, you know, targeting your entire body. That's probably just good enough, isn't it, for most people? I would have thought that's achievable.
Even half an hour. You could do half an hour of reading your book, put your book down, half an hour of, what do they call it? Like a prison workout for people who don't have a gym or don't have space. You could do like a prison workout. You could do press ups, sit ups, all in the space of a narrow piece of floor space. And then you can do burpees. You can do different yoga positions as well. Is really good on the muscles and really good on expanding your chest cavity so you can breathe a bit better.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think something that I've been trying to incorporate into this structure, you know how you're talking about reading, one of the challenges I've taken up recently is trying to get back into meditation. And that for me is probably the most difficult thing that I've come across, because my mind works at like 100 miles an hour. Like my mouth can't keep up with the things that are going through my head.
I'm exactly the same.
But meditation seems to be the only thing that can level me out a little bit. So when I'm feeling like, if I'm depressed, which is, it seems to happen when I am in this sort of caged environment and I'm not as productive as I want to be, then just sort of, you know, getting that breath in and getting that breath out. And I struggle with it. That's like something that you're talking about how hard it is to read Marxism. I find it super hard for me to sit down and not think that I'm wasting my time through sort of doing this meditation. and I might be being a bit, you know, of a numpty in that sense, but to me it's like it's super tough. And maybe it's easier for
others. It's necessary for you to feel grounded.
Yeah.
Although it's different, meditation's different for everyone who does it, but the way I like to do meditation is kind of sit down. I don't do the cross-legged thing because I'm not that flexible anymore. but I just sit preferably on a hard chair, hard wooden chair. And I try and have as little background noise as possible. However, once you're in that zone of focus, focusing on your breaths in, focusing on your breathing out, the background noise can change. Yeah. And you just don't notice it. But obviously everyone has, like I said, everyone has different experiences with meditation. A lot of people haven't tried it before, and I recommend it 100%. Even you could do 2 minutes before you go to bed, or 5 minutes before you go to bed, or 5 minutes in the morning, or 10 minutes, whatever. That short amount of time, all you have to do is focus on your breathing in and breathing out really calmly, and trying to direct your focus and pinpoint your focus onto this one individual aspect, it can really kind of wipe the slate clean, so to speak. And you really kind of get grounded. You have a new day, especially in the mornings. You can forget about what's happened overnight. If you had a bad night's sleep, just make your bed, meditate, wipe the slate clean, and then start on a brand new, fresh day. You're feeling good, and then, yeah, it all goes uphill from there.
I totally agree. Yeah, without a doubt. I think that, like you said, meditation for me can sometimes be part of my exercise routine as well, but without a doubt, I'm going to take that as a challenge to add to my daily life regime as well. There's so many other things. I think that's my problem, is I constantly think, and this is what happened when I finished my degree, and my mum sort of criticized me for saying this, but once I'd done it, I was like, oh, it's done now. Like, that's it. It's fine. Don't want to hear about it again. I want to move on to the next thing. And that, like, maybe that's a little bit sort of dismissive of the time that I put into it, but like, it's done, move on. I want to take on my next challenge.
Yes, but there's a saying about worrying, and if you can do something about it, then there's no need to worry, because you're going to do something about it. And if there's something you can't do about it, then there's no need to worry, because you can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
You just kind of, but with that sense, with that example of you with uni, although you've had 3-4 fantastic years learning, your learning won't stop, although your experience with uni will.
Yeah.
But I know what your mum means, but I also know what you mean. It's good to think, you know what, I'm going to put that aside now. Although I have fond memories of that time, I'm going to carry on with my dream, with what I am meant to do, with what I think I should be doing with my life. And it's always good to have that challenge and to have that goal and to have that dream that you strive to meet, hit, whatever word you want to use. But a lot of people come out of school, come out of uni, come out of college, whatever, and think, oh, I don't learn anything after this, my learning days are over. But
yeah,
even my parents, they learn something new every single day.
Yeah.
And they're 55 and 54. So it's, yeah.
It's humbling. It's humbling to hear that.
Yeah.
Because to me personally, I felt I've learned more from life than I have from university personally. But that's just me.
Yeah.
That's just who I am as a person. I've learned more from people who have taught me in the industry and through traveling and through meeting my friends and going places with you guys. And you yourself have taught me a lot as well as a friend. And I think that to me is more valuable, and that's probably why I'm being dismissive in that sense. Yeah. And so there's that sort of value scheme where you've got, in my mind, an endless road. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't, like you say, you shouldn't think that they're the one chapter's over, therefore you stop learning. It's like, to me, it's just continuous.
Yes, yes. You do have that. You're very goal orientated. You meet one goal, get rid of it, and go for the next one, which is very good. And I think everyone's just got to remember where they came from and who your family are and who your friends are, and just be happy. Because a lot. There's been many a time where I've done something, ended up thinking, I'm not really happy with that decision I made, albeit it could be eating a burger at 2 o'clock in the morning or having a kebab after a night out. Next morning is like, I don't think I should have done that. But as long as you just take it easy, have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your life is going to be great.
I totally agree with it. I think one of the fitness guys I follow, he says, like, be good most of the time. In that sense, to me, what you're describing is that 80-20 sort of scenario where, you know, for 80% of the time you can be consistent, but 20% of the time
as long as you're meeting your own goals. Exactly. If you meet your goals, then that's fine, but my ethos is, if it doesn't bring you joy, don't do it.
Oh.
And with a lot of people, like yourself, with myself, with a certain aspect, is meeting goals is a part of enjoyment. I enjoy setting goals and thinking, in a year's time I'm going to be here, in 2 years' time I'm going to be here, in 3 years' time I'm going to be there. And meeting those goals, I can kind of really feel accomplished, and I really feel kind of quite joyful over that.
I love that. That's it right there. I think the level of happiness from being able to understand that, for instance, you won't be happy once you've achieved something. I think that's what I'm trying to describe. That's it right there. Is what you've described is that you have a vision where you're going to continuously achieve goals, but along the way you're happy with where you are anyway.
Yeah.
And it's
always, I've got a little bit of a saying when I play golf as well. Even if you mess up the shot, as long as it goes forward, you're still going forward. So you could hit it and it would go 10 yards forward. You could hit it and it can go 200 yards forward. However, you're still going forward.
Yeah.
As long as you're on the same path to meet your goal, it doesn't matter how long it takes for you to get there. As long as you're working towards it and you finally meet that goal, then yeah.
I love it. That's it. Well, mate, I think that's a perfect way to end the podcast, just on that. That's just like such a like heartwarming way to end. I think I'm going to keep it like that just because it's so perfect. So anyway, thank you very much for this conversation, Johnny. And
Thank you, mate. Wow,
it's been so much fun just like
it's
reminiscing.
It's been great to talk to you, man. It's been great to talk to you.
I love it. And I'm hoping that this is going to inspire a few people to, like, you know, travel, go for their goals, be happy with where they are, as well as, you know, achieving for more. You've just summed up why I do what I do. So brilliant on you. And just, yeah, go do stuff. And don't be too harsh on yourself like Johnny is with Marxism. So we'll leave it there.
Me and reading.
It's been a Taylor's Tales podcast. This is Chris's Corner. I'm Chris, your host, and that's Jonathan Edwards. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.